whole Sanus Planet community. It's amazing that you're here already again today, because today we have a really special guest. Like always, we have always special guests, really amazing people talking in this podcast. And today it's a friend I just got to know recently, Surazan Shrestha. And I was already asking to say the name right, because it's a Nepali name, Surajan, right? It's a Nepali name. Nice. So you live in Nepal, and you come from Nepal, and you are an animal rights activist, or you're an activist in general, but mainly concerned on animal rights, but as well on environmental conservation. And Surazan is promoting veganism a lot, and that's what I love. You can see it already on the t-shirt. Vegan yet? I saw your t-shirt already. Nice. And you worked a lot for the Animal Rights Club, which is the ARC, if some of the people who listen know it. You worked as well for the rescue of companion animals, and you raise your voice for working animals like captive held elephants and wildlife conservations, environmental conservation. So I think that we too have a lot to share today. Well, first of all, welcome. Very nice that you take your time to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, May, for providing me this, inviting me on behalf of Sanus Planet Podcast and providing me this wonderful opportunity to share my long decade activism for the animals, especially in the animal welfare and rights sector. Thank you again.
Yeah, it's a very important cause. So I'm very happy to have people like you who are active, who have people who are doing so much and who got a lot of knowledge already within the last year. So my first question in the end, indeed, is like, how did you even start to become an activist? Why did you become an activist? Or what did you bring? What was the first moment that changed your life to be an activist? Or have you always already been connected to animals from small on? Or how did that happen?
So this, if you scratch the history, like I was already vegetarian when I was around 10 years old, and since my childhood, I have been witnessing animal sacrifice, which happens especially during festival time, and during that festival time, especially that happens in our society, in our neighborhood. And while witnessing those inhuman activities taking place, I used to question myself, and then and question the nature of humans, like why they are exploiting, why they are, just suppressing those voiceless, countless voiceless animals who cannot speak for themselves. So in 2012, I got to connect with one of my friends from abroad, who was then promoting humanitarian causes. And so he encouraged me to work for the traditional animal sacrifice issue, since I was already interested in since my childhood. And during a short interval of time, I began to research more on this traditional animal sacrifice part and other several issues, animal rights issues within this sector. So that was the time I decided to open and establish an organization which could work for the rights of animals in the future and in the present days then. And I discussed with my friends in my high school when I was in high school, and gathered my friends and formed a group and named it as an animal rights club. But
Nice. In high school, that's cool.
and yeah, but later on, I realized that I the thing I realized was that opening an organization was not enough, but the main value lies within the small and gradual changes that make that creates enormous effect through the effect continuous and effective activism. So I believe that we have been doing that for the last 10 years.
I'm pretty sure you have. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's beautiful as well that you were talking to your friends in high school. How did they react on it? Have they been open already for animal rights, and or did you have to really push them?
Actually, I had some of my friends who are already vegetarian, and there were some friends who were quite good in my circle, and they were ready to support any causes that I lead. And even our principal of that high school was vegetarian due to religious purpose. So yeah, we got quite good support from his as well to to organize and create a group within the high school and promote the causes in different other schools through awareness programs. So he coordinated, he helped us a lot through communication while performing all the awareness programs.
Amazing, nice. So your high school was already vegetarian focused?
Actually not, but our principal was vegetarian at the time. Like he was, he still promotes the vegetarian, like to stop animal sacrifice, especially in the festival time. He is not vegan yet, but he promotes the, you know, peaceful festival. I mean, like that in the religion.
When we talk about the sacrificing animals and festivals, can you mention one? Because at my home, I mean, I know, for example, the Garimai festival. I heard about it. I saw pictures from a friend who was there, and it's horrific to see that. And I cannot even imagine to be there at this moment to really realize or to see and witness what's happening there. Can you explain a little bit what it means to sacrifice animals, why people do that, what is the tradition behind, or what do people believe by doing that? Can you explain a little bit? At my culture, it's not so typical that people really know that so much.
Okay, so as we many of us know that Nepal has lots of like maximum people, citizens living in Nepal is the follower of Hindu religion. So what happens is that during the Dasai festival, which generally happens in the month of September, so there's one Hindu festival is one of the biggest festival for Hindu followers, and at the time lots of people sacrifice animals with the think that their wishes comes true if they offer the sacrifice to the Goddess Durga. But actually, Goddess Durga, if we analyze, you know, the history, the beliefs that we have, and Goddess Durga quite actually won over the demon, and she sacrificed, you know, the demon and spilled the blood. But that was to promote the peace rather than you know, sacrificing somebody. But people took it as in another way and have been sacrificing animals, innocent animals, for the last many years.
I heard once from a friend who was there in Garimai, at the Garimai festival. She told me that she was talking to some people there and she wanted to understand why people do that. And she said some people answered her that they put nearly all of the money they have into this one animal, to raise this animal so they can sacrifice it then for God to have a better life. But they themselves are not allowed to eat this animal at the end. So they are kind of starving and are hungry, and they are sacrificing an animal to have a better life while starving. It's really hard for me to understand, right? But this is, I don't know, this belief what people have so much, the traditions we believe in and hold on, they are like insane what they are doing with us. I really have a hard time when talking about God and beliefs, and because so many things behind just don't make any sense for me. But I grew up in a different way, so I can't understand it, because I have never been there. I have never been raised like that, right? So it's a completely different culture, different foundation I have. It's hard to understand. Yeah,
you know, like we have lots of people still going through poverty in our country. So I think the only person, or let's say only image they have, is that they will if they cannot do it themselves, then God is there to take care of them. And since their ancestors have been following the same tradition for like several hundreds of years, they have been, and they get encouraged to follow the same tradition, thinking that God will take care of them. And even they are not much in that standard to take care of themselves, you know, like for the foods, good food and quality food and quality education and quality health services. They still try to manage everything they can on their hand to offer something for the God. So yeah, that has been quite a problem. I mean, yeah, if we could have introduced a good quality education and proper awareness in those sectors, then definitely something would have changed. But till now, that much level of effort hasn't been, you know, made. So yeah, the things quite stays the same from the past.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you today as well, the one, if you can maybe mention one of the hard moments you faced as an activist and one of the beautiful moments. Maybe you have something in mind, like something which was so hard for you that you maybe even were crying and it was hard to witness or to see, but as well on the opposite side, some beautiful connection with an animal or some beautiful change in other people you have seen or something which lifted you up. Because I think in life there's always these both sides, right? There's always an up and down. And I know many people, even people who listen to this podcast, sometimes they see, I mean, we people in general, we see the hard things and they are easier to see than the good things, but the good things are always there everywhere. And I think we need to see both. So maybe you want to share both from both sides, one story you have, or?
So the thing, like we have been especially working for the welfare of captive herd elephants since 2013. So at first, when we started like raising voice for the elephants in 2013, like by writing an article and publishing it in national newspaper. So at the time we were in the initial days of this campaign, we used to call. Who used to get quite threatened by the people living here because the annual festival called International Elephant Race, which was called International Elephant Race then in back in 2013, that like the tourism entrepreneurs have organized it since 2004 to increase the flow of Western tourists, international tourists in Nepal. So as I started a campaign to reduce the cruelty of elephants in that festival, I got quite threatened by the local people living here. So yeah, that was quite a hard moment. But we, despite those, we continued our effort, and slowly after years and years, we have got quite used chains in that festival, but it hasn't stopped till now, but still we are trying to change the, you know, small part within a component within that festival. So I would like to mention in a timeline basis that we just a few months back in 2013, the time before the schedule of the elephant festival, we began to oppose protest against that through articles, and they suddenly changed the name from the International Elephant Race to Chitwan Elephant Festival in order to get rid from the international pressure, because elephant race terminology quite seems, you know, quite cruel to the international tourists who are living abroad, and they were quite aware about the importance of the Asian elephants. And in 2014, with the pressure that we had given, and they added another activity inside the elephant called Elephant Picnic. So that was quite nice improvement part of the elephant festival, because because through that activity, elephants were fed delicious vegetables and fruits. Mm-hmm. And that was quite nice to see. And for the first time, they had changed, you know, reduced the elephant track. Like at first, they used to have a 150-meter elephant race, and the elephant had to take a U-turn and again come back 150 meter in order to win the elephant race. But later on, as we investigated and, you know, and showed that the elephant, being a huge animal, cannot take a U-turn and run like that. And slowly and slowly, they in 2014, they...
And the eyes probably as well, no? I mean, they have the eyes like on the sides. They don't see forward. They see sideways. No, it's not a... attacking animal, it's like a fleeing animal, so the turn might be different how they see it, right?
And the good thing is that in 2014, you know, addressing the continuous pressure given by us, they changed, I mean, they reduced the track to just one side, not taking a turn. So that was also a small part, but still an improvement part. And in 2015, they again to get the read from the international pressure, they changed the activity name from elephant race to elephant fast walk, but still all the activities were same, just the change in the name.
And in
2016 we protested, like four volunteers from our organization protested inside the elephant festival arena, and that was quite threatening as well, because there are lots of people who are opposing us inside that festival. And so for the last time, ox cart race and horse cart race, which had been happening since 2004, happened for the last time in 2016. So we got to stop the ox cart race and horse cart race in that year. So again, in 2016, the bad thing was that organizers added elephant polo inside the festival, in the festival activity. So the World Elephant Polo Association has already, the pioneer of the elephant polo has already stopped organizing elephant polo, but this Chiton Elephant Festival organizers continued that year. Mm-hmm. And as we slowly progressed on this special campaign in 2018, we teamed up with PETA Asia to expose this elephant cruelty happening in Chiton Elephant Festival, and the COVID hit off, but still from as our inner activity was going, we succeeded to convince to lots of companies we were sponsoring Chiton Elephant Festival to withdraw their support and sponsorship from the Chiton Elephant Festival. So after COVID, the Chiton Elephant Festival hasn't happened till now, but this year they are again planning to organize the Chiton Elephant Festival. But hopefully elephant polo and elephant football, elephant car football could be stopped this year. So we are still on the lobby process. So, from the start to here, there are lots of moments where we had tried to communicating, having a proper communication with the festival organizer committee, and so that we could inspect all the activity happening inside the festival and prepare.
We have been there then checking it out, filming it, or seeing how they organize it, how they do it, how they treat the animals and all of that, right?
Even while witnessing, preparing a report, and while capturing all those elephant activities, elephant games inside the elephant festival, one time I had cried. And but the good thing was that some people from the organizer committee themselves came and, tried to make me feel like warm, and they said that. And they now realize that what happens to the elephant, in the elephant festival. So that was quite emotional, but a good part inside that, all these things that were happening. So these things are from the top to the bottom, the hard moments is still in there, but still lots of change that happened, and it's quite a good moment for me as well.
Nice. Well, about the animals, about the elephants, I was in Thailand to film at the Elephant Nature Park. I was connecting with Lek Shalert, which is, she gave me some interviews as well for my movie, because I'm working on this movie, Hope. And then I filmed one of her speeches when she was talking about to the volunteers and explaining the tourists as well, how the elephants are treated. So they are letting someone even sit on them and ride them. And she showed us this iron thing what people put sometimes under the seats where the tourists are sitting on, so the tourists don't see that, but it's an iron, I don't know how to call it, an iron seat with really bad and very deep and stingy sticks, which are like really pushing into the elephant's body. And when she showed that, she even started nearly crying, and I saw that pictures, and then she showed some videos, and sometimes it's so hard to see what people are doing to animals. It's like so insane and not understandable at all. And I don't know. I mean, to change these things where what people see as normal to do with animals or to animals, many people see it as normal and as part of their culture, their traditions, and it has to be done like that because it was always like that. I think this is an easy excuse to tell ourselves, well, it has always been like that. It has not always been like that. It has just not. And but we hold on things what we created within the years, and now we hold on something which has not always been like that. But we call it like it was always like that. So it's easier to hold on because it was always like that, so we don't change it. It takes quite a long time to process this all, but as well for people to change this. So I can imagine it's not the easiest one you are going through, because many times you work for something so hard and so long to see these little tiny steps. But then when you look back at the moment when you started the project, how it was then and how it is now, then you see this big change you have done already, right? Or you created.
Yeah.
And that's then really making us happy as well at the same time, no? At the moment they feel like small steps, but then in the end all these small steps accumulate, they come together, and then it's a big change what happened. I can see that as well in South Tyrol, in my home. When I became an activist, many people asked me like, why? Like, why are you doing that? Why do we care for the ocean? It has nothing to do with us. And now 9 years later, it's like really I can really, really see that there is a lot of change going on. I mean, really a lot of change, and people start to understand that the ocean is very important for us, and people start to open up. So that's very important, but it takes time. And sometimes when it takes so much time, it's giving people a feeling of it's so slow, and people don't see that it's really changing while it is. So I think that's what, because it sometimes is so slow, people feel a bit hopeless sometimes because they expect or they want that it's faster. What do you think about hope? How is that for you? I mean, the topic of hope is not always an easy one. How do you feel the hope? Do you always have hope, or do you sometimes lose it as well? Or do you have, how do you deal with hope?
Well, I would like to say that hope is something, you know, and like that has helped me to keep continuing the activism, like which I have started since the beginning in 2012, and coming to this 10 years of journey, like I think hope is the only thing that has kept me alive in this. And so as a human, there are some, you know, moments that we feel quite exhausted with all the things, you know, but after certain time we realize that no, we have a long way to move, and we have a long way to go before this ends. And that all happens due to there's a tiny, like little light from the, you know, back of the tunnel that is hope, that which calls us to move forward. And I think that destiny, hope is something, you know, that matters in the activism. I feel like that.
I think so too. Hope is something that is very much needed. And when we talk about hope, obviously we are not talking about the hope people have at home sitting there and just waiting for the hope to come and for everything to be good, but for really the active hope to do something, to create the hope we want to see. And that's what we want to encourage everyone who's listening today as well, like all the people from the Sounds Planet podcast and everyone else who's listening today, just be active yourself, like even if it's with small steps, but if everyone is being active a little bit, the world can change so much. Can you tell me a little bit about the ARC? What are you doing there, or what have you been doing there? Are you still in the organization or still working for it?
Like I have told, like there are certain movements where you feel quite tired, so exhausted, like, you know, working and continuing the same journey, but again, there are some moments which fuels us with the energy to continue that thing. So recently I had an opportunity to be a part of the first ever Himalayan Vegan Festival, which happened in Kathmandu.
And it happens every year, right? The Vegan Festival.
No, I think this is the first time. This is the first time.
No. I think it was already, because a friend of mine was there to cook. Two friends of mine have been there.
That was back in 2016. That was for Asia for Animals conference. That was not the Himalayan Vegan Festival.
That's possible. Okay.
Yeah, and Nikki was there.
Yes, Nikki, exactly. Nikki and Justine was there too.
I think Justine. And yeah, so the when I attended that festival, Himalayan Vegan Festival, I got to meet with lots of activists from all over the world, you know, like many parts of the world. And while having conversation with them, I got lots of things in my mind, you know, as a hope and to move forward with the energy that I used to have. And now, like, I was already sort of exhausted with animal activism for quite some time, but now I'm again filled up and I'm ready to take the things like I used to do before. So
yeah,
yes, we have.
That's amazing.
Forward.
You know, like, I really have to say, I can't share this so much with you, because at my home, people, there are more and more people who are starting to be vegans and talk about it. But sometimes, especially at the beginning, I felt so alone because I did not have the network. And I felt like, is there no one else caring? But it's not true. There are so many people caring. I just didn't know them. And a short time ago, some months ago, we had the first vegan festival at my home, which is not the same like the Himalayan vegan festival. It's very much smaller. But it was really, really beautiful. And there were so many people and so many interested people. And this was so nice and gave me so much energy again, because sometimes we need to go to a place to connect with the people, with so many other people that are like-minded, so we can have the energy to move on. Because sometimes when you're always just talking to people who just they're not on the same page, let's say it like that, then it's exhausting. And we have to be really careful not to burn out from this exhaustion talking to people who just seem not to care, which mostly is not true. They just have another opinion and another point of views, which for me don't make so much sense many times, but maybe some point of views what I have had as well once, because I did eat meat when I, 9 years ago, I did still eat meat and animals. And at the same time, I thought I loved them. But now when I think back, it's like, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, just like, it just doesn't make sense. So I think I feel like, when I was there eating meat myself, I did not see it from the point of view where I see it now. And to know that I was there once helps me to reach people who are there much better and easier. But I need the people who are where I am now to connect and to feel not alone and to feel, wow, there are so many who care. So to fill up the energy, this is very important. What do you think about that, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think the same thing, you know, like, there are lots of people in my in this organization called Animal Rescue who have been volunteering, but the thing is that they get replaced every time. You know, like we have here, there's so much pressure from family to own something while we get older. So lots of volunteers have already gone to abroad for the further study, the name is for further study, but they actually go for the employment in the, you know, abroad. And they haven't come back till now. The thing is that there are again some volunteers who have been stayed here and quite active for this veganism causes and have been actively participating with us to promote the veganism and also for the animal rescue and again for the welfare of captive held elephants as well. So as I've asked before, like, I'm still the part of the Animal Rights Club, and we have been doing it voluntarily for the last 10 years. And all we have tossed every sector of animal welfare, animal rights and conservation sector till now with the help of volunteers and the community people. Yes.
Nice. That's amazing. And it's very good that there are many volunteers as well helping, like people who really help without wanting to get paid, because many times organizations just don't have the money to pay people. So that's good that people help as well for free and volunteer. That's amazing. Yeah, that's important. Yeah. What are you up to right now, or what are the are you on project? I mean, you just came back from the vegan festival, right? How was the vegan festival in general?
Yeah, it was good. Like, there were lots of speakers, international and national and international speakers from different areas of the animal rights sector and veganism. And even I got to meet with lots of people who I have only heard about but haven't got to meet. But in festival, like you have mentioned before, like Lake Charlotte from the Elephant Save the Elephant Foundation.
Was she there?
Yes, she was there. Oh, nice. And
Amazing.
It was quite good to, you know, listen her speech and her experience with the elephants. And there are lots of people from, you know, health sector to give information about veganism from the nutritional perspective. And there were lots of activists like Maneka Gandhi from India. She is a politician, as we all know. And she was also there. And we got to watch a documentary called Maka Dudh, the world premiere for that documentary, which exposed the dairy industry, especially in Southeast Asian nations like India and Nepal. And overall, it was quite good and quite, you know, eye-opening for me again. And I got to meet with lots of people. And now after the festival, like, I have lots of vegan, international vegans in my connection, my Facebook and Instagram at the moment.
Nice, that's amazing. Yeah, to be connected. And then to show as well that it is not just, I hear many times from people who don't, I think it's mostly people who don't really understand veganism, that say it is just a like mode, how to say that in English, it's like a fashion thing to be vegan. Like, no, it's not a fashion thing, it's so much more. It's a lifestyle, a choice of living a life without cruelty, without giving anyone cruel, and creating suffering in this world, or at least with the will of doing that. Because even in vegan products, it's not always 100% perfect. The products themselves are not made from animal parts, but sometimes the way they are created can be as well not the best. I mean, there are as well good products vegan, and they're bad. There are products which have still problems, like with not vegan products, if it's like a monoculture thing, and I don't know, if it's cutting down the rainforest, that's not a good thing for palm oil is vegan, and it's not a product I would suggest to support. But in the big thing to say that it is just a fashion, it's really like trying to push it away, because maybe people don't want to understand it. Because if people start to understand and to know what is behind, then people feel like we have to change something, and that's what people are not so much willing to do. And it's a hard thing to do, to change, right, to get out of this bubble. And I think that's what makes people afraid of it, because they feel somehow there is something in it which is just right and true, but at the same time people don't want to see it from that point, because then they know they have to change their lives too. And that's a hard one. Change your life, not always the easiest one, but I think it's a beautiful one. I mean, in the end, everything is changing all the time. Everything.
Yeah.
If it's not changing anymore and not growing anymore, then it's about to die. Like, it starts dying in nature. That's a natural that's nature. If it doesn't grow, if it doesn't change, then it's dying. So what do you want to do is my question. Do you prefer to change and to grow? How do you prepare for dying? What's happening?
Or do you prefer to change and go?
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Well, what is the other works you are doing? Because you said as well that you are working for as well like animals, animals what we keep as pets. And what was your work there? How did you work there? What have you done
for the, like, companion animals?
Yes, companion animals. What was the work you had to be doing there?
So it's more like we take dog and cats as a companion animal. So it's more like for the stray animals rather than, you know, taking just as companion animals. So since the 2000, like, we started in 2012, and I think we have started our rescue works from 2013 or 14, like that. And there is an organization called Himalayan Animal Rescue Trust, the only clinic, you know, low cost clinic in our district. So we have been collaborating with them since the start of our rescue stops. And we, like, till now we have been able successfully been able to rescue more than 100 stray animals, including dogs, cats, and ox and abandoned cows who cannot produce milk anymore, and they are left in the street, you know, abandoned. So we have been helping, trying to rescue them as well, because there are lots in the street, and they often get hit by the vehicle, big vehicles, you know, and they get injured in such a way that they can't stand ever again, and they have to die on the road. So we work especially to comfort them in the last time, you know, after the accident. There are no hospitals which could cure them. So yeah, we do some, you know, first aid and trying through emotional attachment in the place where they get the accident.
That's a hard one, I can imagine. When you see an animal which was hit by a car, you can't do much but just prepare and show it that it's, there is some support, some, there are some people who care. That's not an easy one, I think. What has been like, I mean, we can talk about so many things. We have so much to share, and you, I can imagine you have so many stories to tell, good and not so good ones. Probably the most important question, and as well as I see our time is about to end, what is your, like, what do you, what is your big message? I can imagine you, when you talk about veganism as well, you probably do go to schools or to other places where you talk about veganism, or you get invited to talk about it in different places, or as you promote it.
So in the beginning time, when we started our campaign, we used to go to different schools and colleges and aware the students, young students, about the vegetarianism and veganism. Especially at that time, we were not much aware about veganism, but so we started with the vegetarian campaign, you know. But now we talk with people, you know, with like-minded people and lots of youths about veganism. And so the thing is that we don't have, you know, more like project thing, you know, the formal things, but we go in an informal way and talk with the youths about veganism. We discuss with them through social media, you know, comment sections and like that. And but one thing I'm quite happy about myself is that I have helped lots of youths to change themselves into vegan, and lots of youths have been actively raising voice for the promotion of veganism in different parts of Nepal at the moment. And we often get in talks and share our experience, like what the things are going and how we are doing it and what things need to be done, you know, in the future to take it in more effective way. So like that. And there are lots, even in my family, and they were like, I haven't been able to completely stop the consumption of meat in my family, but the consumption has reduced to much more lower level, talking about my parents and even other members of my family. So yeah, I think I've been able to get a good grasp on the campaign that I have been moving forward for the promotion of veganism.
Yeah. That's amazing. I can see that in my family too as well, a lot. And how, what do you think, probably, I mean, I think it was probably your compassion that changed them and that made them understand and to get closer to you and closer to your thoughts and your feelings for animals. I think it's always the compassion that is changing the most. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the thing that matters, compassionate heart, compassionate mind, you know, and a kind heart. Is that thing matters. And yeah, like lots of while even discussing about this veganism thing, lots of counter arguments, you know, like I used to argue with my family members as well. They put their own views and I put my own views, you know, and we begin to discuss within that middle ground and find the view that is appropriate for all of us. And yeah, like that, we have been doing it for several years, and that has been quite effective.
Nice. That's amazing. Really cool. Hey, how can people get in touch with you? If people who listen to this podcast and they want to somehow, I don't know, support you in a way, what can they even do to support you? I mean, the context we will probably put in the show notes, like whatever you want to share, links, and your Facebook name or whatever you can share, we put it in the show notes. But how can people support you? What can people do?
If that is about, you know, like the monetary financial part, if you source the our organization named Animal Rights Club, You can find the activities we have been doing, but you know, due to shortage of volunteers, we haven't been able to update our pace quite since last 1 or 2 years after the COVID. But we have been doing, and even you can get personally in contact with me through my Facebook account or Instagram account, Surajan Shrestha, Surajan and Shrestha. That's my name, spelling of my name. So you can get in touch with me through the social media. And yeah, like the one thing I want to share, like share from last quite few months is that I have been volunteering for this cause for last 10 years, and I want to make it, you know, as a full-time thing and do much more in this activism. So I really need support from people like you who have been listening this podcast. And yeah, you can get in touch with me social media, through social media, and we could discuss like how can we get contributed. And even I will expect to get help from organization like Sanus Planet in the future days, and we'll definitely get in touch for that as well.
Definitely, I will explain you how it works and how you can get you can create as well active or your passive donations by yourself, and I will explain you that personally then. And everyone who is listening to this podcast, everyone who is in the same situation, who wants to do something good for this world, or who has an organization, write me, because really we do support, we give support. That's why the Sanus Planet Foundation exists. And yeah, let's come together and see how we can help each other. That's the most important thing, so we can change this world to a better one, to a beautiful one. And now my last question, what do you want to share still with the Sanus Planet community? What is your most important message, or what do you want to say as your final, let's say, final words for this podcast today? I give that to you.
So the thing is that like we, even people get raised in different family and with different lifestyle and different way of seeing the things in the this environment that they are raised. But one thing is that we all people, we all humans should be able to see the every component of our environment in an equal way. You know, like we have lots of sentient beings with us that are not ours to abuse and exploit, but to have them go with us and share the world in, you know, equality and in equity way. And yeah, we should have the compassionate heart to see the things, to see the life of those innocent animals, so that we could help them and take them with us. So yeah, I think this will be the message I would like to share with all the people who are listening to this, and to all the world as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Surajan. This is amazing. Thank you. Hey, I wish you an amazing time. And I'm very happy that we hear each other very soon, and I explain you how Sanus Planet works, because we want to support you. And yeah, let's stay in touch. Thank you, Sanus Planet community, for listening today. And all the best until the next time. Bye, guys.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.